Thank you very much for having me start this panel of mayors. There was once two planets who met in a bar. And one planet tells the other one, it says, "You're looking a bit pale, exhausted. What's wrong with you?" So the sick planet says, "I have this thing called Homo sapiens." And the other mayor, to comfort him, says, "Oh, don't worry. They will not last very long." So, you know, if planets were to have a conversation, our species would sound like a disease. And I think it's about time that we meet to talk about our species as some sort of a cure. I'm excited about this. I told this to the executive secretary when we met earlier last year. There's so much emphasis on nation states because, you know, we're at the UN. We want to make sure the whole map is covered. So we're obsessing a lot about making sure land is represented, but not necessarily people. And I think mayors represent mostly people rather than land. And I think in a planet where in a few years, within our lifetime, 80% of the population by 2050 will live in cities, it's about time the UN opened it up to itself to cities and to mayors and to elected representatives from local government, because I think that's where the change happens. We had a press conference a bit earlier, and it was meant for the journalists to ask us, but then we ended up asking the journalists. And as a mayor, I said, find me one country that signed the COP21 agreement that actually kept the promise this last 2 or 3 years. Why? Because central governments are very good about signing agreements. But in the end, the bucket goes to the mayors. They are the ones who are supposed to plant trees, to build bike lanes, to make sure buses become electric. And I think we're now in a time where mayors should take central role and represent their populations well, but also not pass the bucket to someone else, but keep to the responsibilities that they have. So this was one way of saying thank you for putting this together and organizing. I see my good friend from Sarajevo here. We were having a regional group of mayors meet together. And the question for us in the Western Balkans, non-EU, no subsidies, not a lot of money, not rich like Geneva, is what do poor mayors do? Do they sort of just give up and say, no, I'm stuck with this city, what do I do? Or do we also get creative and try to find ways where a lot of the changes can happen with not a lot of cost, but mostly with a mentality change. I'll speak of a few concepts. In Tirana, we saw major deforestation and major urbanization. Since when I became mayor, the city grew with 100,000 people, so roughly 25,000 people a year, which means that this 1 million people are now representing a third of the population of one country, small country, but also 50% of the GDP. So the question is, how do we make up for all the trees and all the greenery that we have lost? We started this great program with a good friend of us from Italy, Stefano Boeri, who became the most famous architect for having come up with something called the vertical forest. So basically, how do we get sustainable buildings? Now, you can't get a lot of, they're expensive, those buildings. As soon as you buy them, someone from the Gulf comes and purchases the whole building. So they're nice to see, but not real people don't live there. So we said, but how can we twist this expensive rich country idea from Milan into something called the orbital forest, where we got a plan to plant 2 million trees in a city of a million people by 2030. Now, if you do the calculation, clearly it doesn't add up. A small country, a small city or poor city can't afford it. But what if every kid in the city planted one tree for their birthday every year, and instead of having the city pay, you crowdsource from the rest of the community? It started like a little game, but now you are completely uncool in your class if you haven't planted the tree because everybody else has. And it became a genius idea of planting about 150,000 trees every year, but just including young people who are radicals, who don't believe in dogma, who don't have party membership, who don't pay taxes, who don't vote, and who have no strings attached. If they love an idea, they participate. Otherwise, they just say no. One other idea was, how do cities start it into this biking revolution? And how do we manage streets? Now, if you ask most engineers, they say streets are places where cars go. Is it true? Streets are ways to transport people, not to transport cars. So once we start designing on how to transport the most amount of people and not the most amount of cars, then it really changes our worldview. And someone here said, they're used in New York, but look at Houston and LA. 9 lanes, 12 lanes, 16 lanes they have in Houston, in each side. It's called induced demand. The more streets you build, it's an invitation for more cars to come. So I think trying to treat this democratic way of transporting people makes the whole difference. You know, we were talking with my friends Abdullah here in Sarajevo, and we said, look, so many countries in our region say, but we're not Holland. Yeah, but Holland was not Holland in 1970, when, you know, the car industry and the automobile advertisement was so strong on city councils and basically held city councils hostage. One mayor had to get threatened for causing one road to become pedestrian. But if we start provoking a debate with our societies, we can get more pedestrian spaces in the city. One way we did it is we asked people to think how much money they spend on their car. And when they realize they spend 30% of the income on the car and only 25% or 20-25% on their child, they realize their values had changed without someone asking for their permission. And all of a sudden, we were agreeing to spend money on something that officially we don't say it's our value. No one comes here and says, the most important thing in my life is my car. No. You usually say, the light of my eyes, the heart, is my children. But yet, our wallet doesn't think that way, and we are doing things wrong. And I think educating the public is of paramount importance. We work with something that any country can do. There's a few theories out there. One is called the 880 city, which means how to design a city to be accessed from 8 to 80-year-old human being. Another great European initiative is called Urban 95. How does the city look or is designed from the eyes of a 95-centimeter human being, which is an average 3-year-old? If you use some of these endemic species when you do your pavements, when you do your bike lanes, when you do the access to buildings, and if it works for this extinct species, then it works for everybody else. And I think these are some very, very easy tools to work in our cities. I don't think you need a lot of money to hire something called a bike mayor. It just needs to be someone in your city who loves biking and who's willing to run a program like we do in Tirana, a mandatory program in all our kindergartens to get 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds to learn how to bike. Because if you grew up with an iPad or a Nintendo, clearly biking was not your thing, but it can be learned, and we're human beings. You know, since we're the UN, and to conclude, and then we can have questions and answers, sometimes we need to go back to the basics. You know, birds are made to fly. That's their natural being. Fish are made to swim. That's their natural being. But humans are not made to sit in a wheel. We're made to walk and run. And I think sometimes by going to these bases and trying to use these educational tools, particularly in nurseries and kindergartens, you know, we joke in Tirana, we said, a kid who plants a tree will never cut one and most likely will never spit or urinate in public or throw trash. Why? Because people do those things in places where they don't belong. But in a place where you belong, like your own home, you don't do that. In a city where you belong, because you've planted a tree or joined a club or sing in a church choir, it doesn't matter. You have put roots. And sometimes if these roots are even physical and not only metaphorical, like these tree planting campaigns or these bike learning schemes, they have long-lasting effects in our cities. And to conclude, let's think of the number one asset for cities. You know, sometimes we say it's the number of bike lanes or the number of trees. You know, number one, people. There's cities without trees and without boulevards, but there's no cities without people. And once we go to the basics and focus on the epicenter of the police, of the agora, of centering spaces and communities around people, then we can come up with great urban initiatives. The last one we launched last week is, how do we design from now on, and how do we cluster services so anyone in the city within 500 meters can have access as a caregiver, as a toddler, or as a child? And how can you get most of 90% of your daily tasks on foot, which is the pharmacy, the bakery, the hairdresser, whatever you need to do for the grocery? And I think some of these simple tools help design cities that work for people and not for cars. Thank you so much.